I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This edition of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by Balanced Body Labs, Florida Alternative Medicine, and Six Pack Bags. All right, welcome everybody to another edition of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I'm your host, John Hansen, and this is episode number 3 of our Mr. Olympia series. And today we are going to be talking to 1982 Mr. Olympia, Chris Dickerson. And Chris had a very extensive career in bodybuilding, not just the 1982 Mr. Olympia, which was pretty much the end and the highlight of his career, but he also had a long career that started back in the 1960s. And he was actually the first African-American to win the AAU Mr. America title back in 1970. So that was a huge event in Chris's life and in the bodybuilding world. So Chris is going to talk about that. He's also going to talk about his coach, Bill Pearl, who helped him get involved in bodybuilding, get started in bodybuilding, and also created his physique and helped him with his posing and his attitude with the judges and everything. So Bill was a huge influence in Chris's life, as he was in a lot of other top bodybuilders as well. So we got a great interview coming up with Chris Dickerson, one of the real gentlemen in the sport of bodybuilding. As I mentioned, we are brought to you today by Balanced Body Labs. If you are looking to achieve your physical best, you need the optimum level of nutrients to reach your peak performance. And when your nutrients go missing, so does your ability to have a productive day. Balanced Body Labs has an easy-to-use at-home test kit to help you detect your nutrient levels. They offer 3 different categories of tests, one for endurance athletes, another one for those training for a competition, and another one for weight loss. You just choose your test, you take the simple test at home, you mail the test kit back, and then you log on for your results. They will test for your vitamin levels, your amino acids, your testosterone levels, your cortisol levels, and your lactic acid. No more going to a doctor's office, making an appointment, going through those painful blood tests, and getting your blood drawn. If you don't know what your nutrient levels are, you won't be able to perform at your optimum levels, and Balanced Body Labs will help get you there. So just log on to balancedbodylabs.com. Sign up for the very easy-to-use at-home testing kit today. Thank you very much to Balanced Body Labs for sponsoring this website. All right, this week in the bodybuilding world, we had a very, very tough week. I'm sure most of you in the bodybuilding world have heard. We had 2 unfortunate deaths in the bodybuilding world from 2 prominent figures. The first one was Dallas McCarver, who passed away on August 22nd. Dallas was only 26 years old. He was a top pro bodybuilder. Just took 2nd this year at the Arnold Classic to Cedric McMillan. He was not competing in the Olympia this year. He was training. He was a huge guy. I think Dallas was 6'1", about 330, 340 pounds, and he passed away on Tuesday. Apparently, it was a choking incident where he was choking on his food. So that was a very, very unfortunate incident. The whole bodybuilding world was grieving his loss. I never really met Dallas personally. I did meet him last year at Dexter Jackson's show out here in Jacksonville, Florida, the Jack's Physique, and Dallas was doing a guest posing for Dexter, and I got a chance to interview him. And he was always a very, very nice young man, very much a gentleman, and real, real shame to see him lose his life at such a young age because he had such a future at only 26 years old. People were predicting that he was going to be a future Mr. Olympia winner. So that was a tragic death. And then only a couple days later, on the 25th of August, Rich Piana passed away. And Rich had an accident about 3 weeks ago. I'm not sure if it was a heart attack or if he just tripped and fell, but anyways, he hit his head at his home out here in Tampa, and was taken to the hospital, and I guess they put him on a medically induced coma, to try to save his brain, I guess, and he never really recovered. So he passed away last Friday after about 3 weeks in the hospital, almost 3 weeks in the hospital. And Rich was another real superstar, I guess you could say, in the social media world, probably one of the biggest social media stars in the bodybuilding world. He had over 1 million followers. He had his own line of nutrition supplements, about 5% nutrition. He had a huge, huge following on YouTube, on his YouTube channel. I met Rich last year when he moved to Tampa, Florida from California, and he was training at the Powerhouse Gym in downtown Tampa. And then that gym closed in February, so then he went over to the new Powerhouse Gym Athletic Club, also in Tampa, on Hillsborough Avenue. Rich was always a real nice guy. I didn't really know him that well, but whenever I said hi to him, he was very, very nice. Any one of his fans that ever came up to him, he would always talk to him. He would stop and take a picture with him. He was brutally honest about the sport, and he lived life his own way, and he did things his own way. And unfortunately, Rich is now gone also at the young age of 46. So terrible week in the bodybuilding world to lose two people. And we were supposed to interview last week Jim Raquel, and Jim was a top IFBB judge for many years. And we have a new series coming up starting next week, season 3 for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. It's going to be all about the 1981 Mr. Olympia. And Jim was a part of that show. I'm not sure if he was a judge or was just at the show, but he was going to give us his thoughts on the 1981 Olympia. And he's been best friends with Danny Padilla for about the last 40 years. And him and Danny were going to join us for the show. But Jim was so upset over what happened last week in the bodybuilding world, he didn't even want to talk. So hopefully we can talk to him this week and we'll have that interview for you soon. Roger Schwab will be joining us next week for our first interview for that 1981 Mr. Olympia series. And we also, as I mentioned before, we got an interview coming up with John Balick, who went on to own Ironman magazine. And at the time of the 1981 Olympia, he was a photographer for Joe Weider's magazine. So he was in attendance at that show as well. I also want to mention we are brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance out your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that will ensure you not only look and feel amazing, but you're comfortable knowing that they are there for you every step of the way. They also offer very competitive pricing along with their quality products and services. So just give them a call for more information and experience firsthand what sets them apart from the rest. You can use the promotion code LEGEND for a free consultation and 20% off all packages. You can contact them at info@floridaalternativemedicine.com. That's FLAlternativeMeds.com, or call them at their office number, which is 813-922-8939. And we are also brought to you by Six Pack Bags. If you are on a special diet and you need to bring your meals with you, you really want to check out these special bags at SixPackBags.com. These bags will allow you to bring your meals with you. You can pack them in different containers. You also have room for your protein drinks, for water, for your utensils, and anything else you want to bring. If you're on a special diet, you need to bring your meals with you, whether it's for the day when you're going to work or school or you're going on a trip, you really got to check these bags out. So go to sixpackbags.com, and you can use the promo code LEGENDS10 to get 10% off any order that you purchase. All right, thanks to our sponsors for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And here is our interview with 1982 Mr. Olympia, Chris Dickerson. Enjoy. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legend Show. And I'm very proud to have 1982 Mr. Olympia, Chris Dickerson, with us here today. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing just great, John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. I always admired your career. And I told you this before, I think you're one of the most articulate and well-spoken bodybuilders of our of any generation.
Uh-oh, you say that before the interview. I'm in trouble. Well, here it goes.
All right. Well, Chris, let's talk about your career. I know that you started training a little bit later than a lot of guys did. Some guys start, we just did an interview with Rich Gaspari not too long ago, and he started working out when he was like 13 years old. But you started a little bit later in life, right?
A lot later. I started bodybuilding after college.
Okay.
23 years of age.
Hmm.
And I had always put it off because the image of being a bodybuilder was not complimentary then.
Yeah.
And who wants to be a muscle head and got all those muscles and you're trying to make up for a lack of something, or you doubt your sexuality, or you got a small implant there, whatever. I hope I'm not being deeped out, but all of those, and they all become muscle bound when you're old. I heard all of them.
Yeah.
So it's just that I thought, okay, I've done my college. I want to do this. And then I saw an ad in Mr. America magazine Bill Pearl had just recently opened a gym there in L.A., where I was at the time, on Manchester Boulevard. They gave the address, and that was all I needed.
So you got into bodybuilding because you saw a picture of Bill Pearl then, basically, right?
Right. One of the legends. I'd been following the magazines, John.
Okay.
But here's a legend who's opening a gym just about a mile and a half from my house, according to the address.
Wow.
Didn't have a car then. I was one of the few people in L.A. without a car, if you can imagine. Took a bus, two transfers to get there. And I walked into his gym, and I was so nervous. Bill, I could have I thought I was going to pee on myself. So walked in there, all these huge guys. Weights are pounding on the floor, and I thought, let me get out of here. But somehow, Bill saw me, and he beckoned me to come in, fellow. That's a bad imitation of him. So I said, oh, Mr. Pearl, my name is Chris, and I want to be Mr. America someday. It just blurted out. I don't know what made me say that. He says, and he still remembers this. This is what's funny. He said, well, you and a lot of other people, Chris, let's just start and see what happens. He was very tactful with me and very patient.
Now, I saw an earlier picture of you, Chris, and it looks like your calves were huge and the rest of your body was like a normal person.
Exactly. I was a good soccer player.
Okay.
A Quaker boarding school in Ohio. And the teachers were mostly from England. And soccer was the game, what we call football.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was a 4-year soccer man in high school, and so they were still there, those calves.
So how long when you started training? Well, let's talk about your training with Bill Pearl, because I think that's interesting.
Yes.
I know Bill trained a lot of people, and he trained a lot of champions, such as yourself. So what kind of training program did he have you on? I heard Bill always trained every part of your body. I mean, he was a real stickler for that.
He works from the ground up or from the inside out, however you put it.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that the hard way. He wrote out then your gym membership included your program being written out by the owner.
Yeah.
So he had these index cards and he did my measurements and he wrote the program out for me and I had to follow it. The language is totally foreign to me. Incline dumbbell lateral. I said, what the heck is that? I go to Bill. I said, oh, excuse me, Mr. Pearl. Call me Mr. Pearl. What is an – and he's – I'll show you. He was very patient. Walked me on the gym floor, and I was really embarrassed. Everyone felt like everybody was looking. And he said – and he would do it for me. And then I would do it. And then people would snicker, some of them, because I was such a beginner.
Mm-hmm.
He said, being a beginner and knowing nothing made me his best student because I had nothing to unlearn. Mm-hmm. I had bad habits.
Right.
He worked me from the inside out, and I had to do a lot of stomach. And I had no abdominals, just one smooth belly. I wasn't in bad shape, but I just had no abdominals. I hadn't developed them.
Mm-hmm.
So he worked me, and I'll never forget. He had me do what we call chins. Some call pull-ups. We say chins.
Right.
He wrote on the index card, 4 sets, 10 reps. Now, I could do maybe one. So I said, Bill, I can't do but one. He said, okay, well, you'll have to do you'll have to do 40 sets of one. So I'm under the chinning bar forever. And I remember this one guy, Jerry Wallace, was always kidding me. And he walked by me one day, and I'm standing on the chinning bar. He says, are you still here? I said, yes, I'm afraid so. I had to do it all. I had to do it. He would not allow you to not do the repetitions.
Wow, that's great. Now, what was your genetics like, Chris? How fast did you respond to weight training, and how fast did your physique build up?
Well, I was really like it. It was like a duck would take to water. Mm-hmm. As the saying goes, I was a real natural.
Yeah.
Short. I've always been short and rather muscular a type.
Yeah.
And so I just took to it, and everything would show because I'm 23, remember.
Mm-hmm.
I, teenager. And Bill would say, well, the fact that you're 23 is to your advantage because your body is totally mature. Whatever you add on it will show up.
Yeah.
So it's true. And I was very muscular, and I would just take to it. And about a year and a half, I was competing.
Really? A year and a half? I was going to ask you how long it took you before you started competing.
My first competition was in November of 1965.
Okay.
And Mr. Long Beach, I was third place.
Okay.
Love that trophy. It's still my favorite.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's true.
So what was your first experience like, your first contest? What was that experience like?
Well, it was very informal. You just sort of went. You filled out the application right there on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my trunks with me. So they said, now the weightlifting was always first, the Olympic lifting.
Yeah.
That we lift, press, snatch, clean, and jerk. We had to wait until the lifters were finished. And then we went on, and I just got up there and did my double bicep. And I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I took pictures. But Bill hadn't yet showed me how to pose. So somehow I became third place. And for those of you who are the historians, Ron Morgeson won the competition.
Okay.
Gable Boudreau was second, and I was third.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. It was a great experience. A little scary. So Bill heard I had competed, and he hadn't told me to do so.
Oh, okay.
So he says, I heard you were in a competition Saturday. I said, oh, yes, Bill. He said, well, I heard you did third. Okay, fine. Are you ready to go to work now? I said, oh, yeah. Okay, let's go. That's all. That was it.
Yeah, I was looking up your contest history on Muscle Memory, and I saw you won quite a few shows in 1966, which would have been the next year. You won the Mr. Atlantic Coast, Mr. Eastern America, Mr. New York City, Mr. New York Metropolitan, and Mr. New York State. So had you moved back to the East Coast by then, Chris?
I moved back to the East Coast because I sort of missed it. And I just had that sort of urge to go back East. And I miss New York. It's a city that'll spoil you. You either love it or you hate it.
Yeah.
So I loved it. And I went back and I competed. I just continued to work out mostly on Bill's routines. I didn't deviate from it at all. And there were so many contests because for every weightlifting meet, this Olympic lifts, there was a bodybuilding show attached to it to draw the audience. So all these meets, and they were open, you know, they were open meets. You didn't have to be right from that region.
Okay. Okay. So now you were always a great poser, but were you a good poser in the beginning?
Well, I think it came naturally to me.
Okay.
That instruction, very specific instruction. And Bill always said, it starts with the feet.
Hmm.
I said he worked from the bottom up. Well, and he had another example. He told me about the footing. And when you're sure of your footing, the rest can go because that frees your torso.
Right.
The head frees your facial expression. But you have to know exactly. You plant it firmly on the floor.
Hmm.
I got all that from him. And I'm so lucky to have gotten it from the best, because I was a late beginner, but he really made up for it.
Yeah, isn't it amazing that you your house was so close to where he was opening up his gym, and that's how you got your start?
Exactly. The pieces just fell into place, John.
Right. So what body parts do you think, Chris, really responded from the beginning? Obviously, your legs and your calves were a strong point.
I would say my back.
Okay.
And my triceps.
Okay.
Biceps were slow to come.
Nope.
And so, but my back for sure, and triceps, they were just, you know, everything I would do would go there. But my body is compact, sort of like a gymnast.
Uh-huh.
And when you're compact that way, you really have an advantage because all those connections are close together.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense. But if you're working one body part, well, the other body part can't be far away, can it? So
yeah.
There we are.
That's a good explanation. I never heard it like that, but yeah. Now, Did Bill have you doing the Olympic lifts also? Because I think, weren't those a part of the bodybuilding routine back then also?
Yes. Bill didn't, but when I went back east, I learned about, see, everything was on the AAU at that Athletic Union. And so I had to do the lifts, and I learned from a Mr. Rudy Sablo, who was head of the AAU, the Metropolitan Association of the AAU. So I learned, and I went to a gym there. That was one thing that going east was to my advantage for, because I didn't know about all that. So I got my maximum of five athletic points, because for a few months, I devoted myself totally to weightlifting, the three Olympic lifts.
Okay, okay.
Just nice, clean, and jerk. They've since taken the press out.
Yeah.
But they're three then, and a lot of guys, they cooperated with me. They were anxious to help me. So It was all a good experience. I feel like I really got it from the ground up between Bill Pearl and Mr. Sablo and the weightlifting community and the bodybuilding community. It's really helped me a lot.
Wow. Okay. Now, the next year, in 1967, you started doing the national level shows like the Junior Mr. America and the Mr. America. Now, were you still East Coast then, Chris, or did you move back to L.A.?
I moved back to L.A. because I wanted to go back to Bill. I didn't want to leave the master for too long.
Uh-huh.
So I went back to Bill's instruction, and he had then moved to Pasadena on East Green Street.
Okay.
So first gym on Manchester Boulevard in L.A., and he moved to Pasadena, and I followed him up there, and we took up where we left off. And so I won the Mr. California in 1967.
Right.
And it's, even though it's a state, it really puts you on the map.
Yeah.
Because it's a tough contest.
Right.
Ari Scott's a former winner, and different people like that that you all know about.
Yeah.
John Covello, if you're those who would remember John Covello.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a wonderful honor. And I'm now 27.
Okay.
So, see, I'm more mature than a lot of the other bodybuilders.
Right. And then you went to the Junior Mr. America, and you took fourth there.
Right. That was my first year. And disappointing being fourth because I'm spoiled. And then I came back, and I won USA. That was a big victory in 68, Mr. USA in L.A. there.
How did you feel about the Mr. America in 67, Bill? That was your first Mr. America contest, and Dennis Tinerino won that year, and Boyer Coe was also in it. How did you feel about that show?
Oh, I thought, great. You know, I think I was sixth.
Yeah, sixth place, right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Right. I felt good about that because that's the top. And so I felt, okay, I'll come back. It didn't bother me at all being sixth.
How did you feel how Dennis looked and Boyer and some of those other guys, Jim Haislop?
Well, now, these guys were so good.
Yeah.
Of course, my favorite bodybuilder at the time was Jim Haislop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he stepped out of a GQ catalog.
Yeah, he was amazing.
Had muscles. So, I mean, he was like the epitome, I felt. And Dennis is my good friend. We all know each other. And that's another thing, not to digress, but
yeah.
We were a very small group. There weren't many of us. And then maybe there were 25 top men in the whole country.
Yeah.
And we knew each other from the magazines. Iron Man was publishing, Strength and Health, Muscular Development. They were the main three for us.
Right.
And so I knew who Ralph Kroger was. I knew who John Covello was. I knew who Ted Brown was. So we'd meet, and we knew each other. I said, oh, my dad, it's John. Oh, so he's pointing to me, too. Hey, that's Chris Dickerson.
Yeah.
And so, and then after the competition, we'd meet at a diner or restaurant and say, okay, you got this time, and next time I'll be my turn.
Yeah.
We'd kid each other, put our trophies on the table, and just hog out on the food. So they were good days.
Yeah.
It's corny, like I'm talking about the good old days, but they really were like that then.
Yeah, I met, you know, Bob Gallucci.
Yes.
We gave him an award at my contest in Florida last year, and he wrote a book, an e-book, and he talked about, well, he talked about his relationship with you, of course, but what he said, how the old days were. Everybody would go out afterwards and they'd all eat together. And it, like you said, you won this time, I'll get you next time, and that kind of thing.
Sure enough, they would. I would go neck and neck. I mean, he still is my good friend, Boyko. And we would compete. Of course we wanted to win when we were up there. But when it was over, it's over.
Yeah.
So there were no hard feelings.
Right.
That was the current of, you know, wanting to beat the other guy. Of course, we were competitors.
Yeah. But it was great camaraderie back in those days.
That's true. And we were sort of out of the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And I really mean we were. Because we were sort of like a cult. You know, strange muscle men putting on these skimpy trunks and flexing our muscles.
Right.
Well, you know, but Arnold, I got to give the devil its due, and I don't mean that derogatorily. Arnold really put us all on the map. Yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger, appearing with Carson, as I did later, I'm proud to say. And a bunch of us, and he was made the movie. He was a superstar. Now people know about bodybuilding. So I'd say between Arnold and the astronauts working out with weights, if you remember.
Yeah.
Glenn, those people, they were working out with weights, and nobody heard of weight training, really. So these mainstream people were using weights, and that helped the whole sport. And then later the women came. But that's sort of the progression of it.
Right. So getting back to 1968, then, like you mentioned, you won the Mr. USA. So that was your first big national title then, right?
Yes.
And you beat Boyko in that one, and you beat Ken Waller and Ralph Kroger.
A lot of them, yes. So I was really now on the national scene. And so the America was the big prize in 1970. It meant a lot to win Mr. America in 1970. And I took the mic, I remember, and I had to say a few words, being the first man of color to win the competition. And I didn't want to make it a racial issue, but the fact was I was. So it was a great, great breakthrough, and I'm just very proud of that title.
Yeah. So we just mentioned 1968, over the next few years, your physique must have really improved every year then, right, Chris? 68, 69, 70?
Yes, I'm really following Bill's lead and doing everything, and the exercises are coming easier to me, but I'm just exploding. My body is really responding very well.
Yeah, so 68, you took third in the America behind Jim Haslop and Boyer, and then in 69, Boyer Co. won, and you were second. So you had a feel that 1970 was probably your year, huh?
Yes. And Bob Hoffman, who was then more or less running things, certainly with the AAU on the totem pole, so to speak, he always liked me. And I remember Bob Hoffman at York, Pennsylvania, at the annual Hoffman picnic. He said, "I want to present the man I think is going to be our next Mr. America, Chris Dickerson, stand up."
Oh, wow.
I was as shocked as everybody else.
Huh.
Well, I hadn't won it yet. I didn't take it for granted.
Yeah.
But I worked in it. I told Bill Pearl about it, and he was delighted.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about what effort did win, what it would mean, so on and so forth.
Wow. Yeah, so that was a momentous achievement, being the first African-American to win the Mr. America, especially back then, because I've heard stories. I wasn't around back then, but
yes.
I heard stories that it was very racial, and that they wouldn't let a black man win the title, you know. And so to be the first winner, that was a huge thing.
Yes, that meant a lot to me in a way, more than the Olympia, except the Olympia was in the other association.
Right.
And Brand X, we called it.
Yeah.
It was IFBB. And so I became a part of that and won the top title in with the IFBB Miss Olympia. But to this day, the Mr. America still means quite a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. People may not realize today, because the AAU is pretty much gone from bodybuilding. But back then, the AAU was the organization. And Mr. America was the title. That's the one every amateur bodybuilder in America wanted to win.
Yes. And when you look at the roster, I mean,
yeah,
my John Grimmick, Steve Reeves, Clarence Ross, all those people. I mean,
Bill Pearl, yeah.
Good, yeah, Bill Pearl. Did I forget him?
Yeah.
Not bad company, you know.
Right, right.
So.
And then after you won that, well, let's talk about that 1970 Mr. America. Who did you feel were your top competitors there? That was the one that Casey Viator went into, right, at 18 years old?
He made his debut there because the country had not really seen him nationally. I felt probably, if I can think of his name, he was a favorite of Vince Gironda, who trained at his gym, Don Peters.
Oh, yeah.
And he was tough. A lot of people were, but Bill taught me also, says, don't single out anybody. When you're on stage, nobody exists except you. Do not look to your left. Do not look to your right. Look straight ahead. Because whoever you look at, you're giving them credit.
Right.
They're going to get the attention. You're going to draw eyes to them. Don't do it. So I did. And I didn't worry about who's judging. He says, you know, don't get involved with judges and what gym they're from and all that politics. Just let your body do the talking.
And that was a philosophy you pretty much followed throughout your whole pro career, you know, with your stage presence like that, right, Chris?
That's what makes him more than a coach. He was a mentor. He was the father I didn't have. Really. My parents were divorced. So the poor man, I burdened him with quite a lot. But he really changed my life, and it's still there.
Yeah. And then you went to the NABBA Mr. Universe that year, also in 1970, right? And you took first place in the short class.
In the short class. I was disappointed. I was so naive. I thought, well, what's the class winner? That's nothing. I want to win. But in winning, I won over Franco Colombo.
Right.
Who hates me to this day. I hope he's not listening. No love lost there.
Right.
But anyway, moving right along, I was very happy to win when I learned what I'd actually accomplished.
Right.
But then, Frank Zane, we're all winning that year.
Yeah, what'd you think of Frank? Was that your first time competing against him?
Well, I was very impressed with his professionalism. He's very cool, very calm. And he's sort of like, he made you feel that he was the winner, even though he hadn't even walked on stage yet.
Wow.
Distant, but he's not one of the boys.
Yeah.
He's not kind of a slap on the back guy. You don't just walk up to Frank and say, hey, Frank, how's it going?
Right.
He's not that.
Right.
But I expect that also. It made him very special.
Yeah. And what did you think of Arnold? Was that your first time competing with Arnold? Because he won the professional division that night.
Yes. I didn't know Arnold. I hadn't ever said two words to him.
Okay.
And I'm impressed with Arnold, but being sort of around Bill Pearl, I was not as impressed with many other people because he was sort of an overgrown kid. But I admire his physique, and I admire his stage presence and his charisma. At the time, I was not overwhelmed with him.
Okay.
Because, I mean, to my right, here's Bill Pearl. So I didn't know.
Yeah. And Reg Park and Dave Draper were also in that show, right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember them much, though, in that.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So then the following year in 71, you went back to the NABBA Universe again, right?
Yes.
And you won the short class again, but Ken Waller won the overall there.
Yes. I was disappointed not winning the overall the second time. But here again, I won the class. And then finally in 73... I won the overall. 72, I took off.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Why did you take 72 off, Chris? Did you needed some time for improvement?
I needed a break from competition.
Okay.
And so I thought, let me just go back to the drawing board.
Did you feel like 73 you were better than ever?
Yes.
Okay. Definitely.
I was up for that.
And then you also went to Dan Lurie's organization, right? The WBBG, and you won the Pro Mr. America?
Yes, that's the biggest trophy, but it doesn't mean the most.
Right. It
goes up to the ceiling.
Right.
And glad the competition was in New York because there's no way I couldn't have gotten it on a plane. but it's there among my trophies. Mm-hmm. See, taking me step by step through this, I see that.
Yeah, we're going year by year.
Some of this I might forget now if you're going to go chronologically on me. But anyway, so far, so good.
And then, now, why didn't you go over to the IFBB at that time? Because the IFBB was pretty much taking off, wasn't it, in the early 70s?
Yes. But the NABBA universe, like the AAU America, still had the prestige. The Olympia then was kind of a new competition. And people sort of in the sport knew it was sort of designed specifically for Larry Scott because he had no place to go.
Yeah.
The Olympia didn't have the prestige it later got.
Right.
So, no, I wasn't drawn to that yet.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of the, like I said, the newcomers, they may not realize how big the Mr. America was, but also the NABBA Mr. Universe was a huge competition. And if you look at the list of winners in that show, it was amazing.
And they came from all over the world.
Yeah.
And it was my first passport ever in my life.
Oh, yeah.
Over there in 1970. And at the time, York, since I was their AAU winner as Mr. America, he actually sponsored the trip for my going to London. So they were behind me.
Okay.
That was quite a trip. And seeing London and all of that was just such an education.
Yeah, I'm sure you had to love that, huh?
Meeting bodybuilders from Greece, and from all over Haiti, South America, Spain, England, of course. It was really something.
And I always heard that was a very fairly judged event, you know, the NABBA universe.
Yes, they liked my physique over there.
Uh-huh.
Because they go for the symmetry and the proportion, not just for the size.
Okay.
And they're a very polite audience. And I've never heard them boo anybody.
Really?
Yeah. Never. Not any English audience have I heard a boo from.
And then the prejudging there too, Chris, I've always seen pictures of that, and it was sort of strange because it was like the judges were sitting in a room right there and the bodybuilders were right in front of them. It wasn't on the stage like it is today.
Exactly. We're on the same level, flat floor, and the competitors were just a few feet from them
in
flat lighting. There was no spot.
Right.
It's for the show. And then when they say show, that meant to present to the public.
Yeah.
That's what that meant. But they wanted to see you literally, not literally, they wanted to see you naked.
Yeah.
That is, without the spot.
Right, right.
So you couldn't hide weak ones.
Right.
Nothing could be overshadowed or highlighted. So that was you.
Yeah, you had to be a great bodybuilder to win first place there.
It was fair judge, no music.
Yeah.
Silence. In fact, the audience was told to be quiet. Because they didn't want any favoritism. So the audience had to shut up. I don't think that would have worked in New York. But we weren't in New York then. But it was a great experience. And I've learned from all of them the differences and the variations, even the different associations and how they judge.
Right. And then in 1974, you went back to the NABBA universe and you won the overall at the pro level, the pro NABBA universe.
Exactly. That was quite a thrill. And I was very confident that year. It must have shown. Yeah.
And you beat Boyer Coe that year also, right?
I forgot. Did I?
Yeah. He was second. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, as the winner, I'd say it was a wonderful experience. It was a wonderful experience.
So you and Boyer had a pretty big rivalry from the very beginning then, right? Right when you started competing at the national level all the way up into the pros and the IFBB.
Yes, that's true, John. That's true. He was a product of, well, he really wasn't a product of Arthur Jones. Arthur Jones would take some credit, but Boyer was his own man, and he had been trained by Red Laurel, a former Mr. America.
Right, in Louisiana.
In Louisiana. So, but he had those incredible arms that were scary. I mean, nobody had arms. No amateur had arms like Boyer Coe.
Right, right.
He was outstanding and a good competitor and a good sport.
Where did you have him beat, Chris, in the legs?
And the legs, because of the shape, and then my thigh cuts and the abdominal area.
Okay.
Boy, abdominals were never outstanding.
Right.
Mine were great, but they got a lot better.
Right. So. Now, you just mentioned a couple minutes ago that you were talking about Arnold, and then you said you were on Johnny Carson. Tell us a little bit about that. How did that come about? Because I remember reading that you were on The Tonight Show before yeah. Arnold ever was, right?
Exactly. I won Mr. USA in 68, and I was back in New York, and a friend says, I'm going to write to Johnny Carson to The Tonight Show. See, wasn't The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson? Because people should know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to get on that show. So he went by way of guest relations, and the word was out. But he said, what would really get you on the show would be if you join the NBC family as a page.
Hmm.
A page is sort of like an usher.
Okay.
So here I am in uniform. I join NBC. I'm in uniform at NBC Studios, 30 Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And then he submitted my resume. Well, the very next day, guest relations came running to me because here's a member of the family who's won this big USA title.
Right.
So I was on. So that's the most frightened I ever was in my whole life.
Oh, really?
It was arranged that I'm in the audience wearing my uniform. And I worked the show.
Uh-huh.
And I was to be called down from the audience, down the aisle in the uniform.
Uh-huh.
And that chair. So I'm waiting to be called. You talk about a scared puppy. That
yeah.
Was
and so how was that interview, Chris? Did he have you pose or did he just talk about bodybuilding? Because nobody knew anything about bodybuilding back then.
No, not really. I knew I was going to, he says, you're gonna pick up Johnny Carson. So I said, what? I said, oh, okay. Because you got to show your strength. Fortunately, I had the weightlifting. So we're on the show. I'm sitting at the chair. He says, now Chris is going to show you just why he won. So I had to take the uniform off. Okay. So my trunks are beneath. It took me forever to get the stupid buttons off. And Johnny's, you know, he's got that expression.
Yeah.
Like, I got undressed. And the audience went, I heard this sort of amazement, and then I began to pose, and I posed, and the audience went ape.
Wow.
So then he walks up to me. I'm leaning against the desk now, having just done sort of a posing routine. He whispered, can you pick me up? Yeah. I thought, God, I've got to pick this man up. I may die doing it, but I've got to. So he says, now, Chris, what happens if a guy comes along and gives you a hard time? What do you do? I said, here's what I do. And so I lifted it up overhead.
Overhead. Wow.
Yeah. And so and then I put him down, and the audience went in. So then that was my cue to run off stage. Says. So I was called if I should win the America to come back next year. So I was on twice consecutively.
Wow. That's great. Yeah. Yeah, that had to be one of the first appearances by a bodybuilder, I would think, on a mainstream show like that.
I've got to tell you on that side, I blabble a lot. But who set me up perfectly, the actress Shelley Winters.
Oh, yeah.
On the show the second time. So he says, Shelley, now what do you think of bodybuilders? He says, what do you mean? He says, do women like that? Do they like all those muscles? So, oh, Johnny, they love it, she says. So he says, well, some people say, no, they're lying. Johnny, they're lying. They love it. So I thought, wow, what a setup.
Yeah.
So then, well, she came on, first of all, saying, you know, Johnny, there's a naked man backstage. Johnny said, no, he's not naked. That's Mr. America. He's wearing his trunks. He's supposed to be. So all of that set me up.
Hmm.
And it was a wonderful experience. I met him backstage, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I did sort of a movie stint with the actor in Burt Reynolds.
Uh-huh.
I met a few celebrities, Diane Carroll, and I met a few celebrities, and I learned that the big successes in life, in any field, if I can be sort of philosophical here,
yeah,
is there's a humility these people have. They're very approachable.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very down to earth because they know what it took to get there.
Yeah.
And they appreciate others' effort.
Right.
That's a one common denominator. It doesn't matter what field it is, bodybuilding, shoemaking, whatever.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Hmm. So getting back to your bodybuilding career then, Chris.
Here we go. No, no, okay. You always bring me down to earth.
No, that was great. That was great about Johnny Carson. I always wanted to ask you about that because I had read about that in Muscle Mags where they said that you were a page on NBC and that you were on Johnny Carson, but I never saw any video of that, so I always wanted to ask you about that.
Yes, I want to get a copy of it because I've got to have pictures in my book, right in my biography, if it ever gets published.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Yes.
So for the next few years, you just you continue to compete in the NABBA universe and Dan Lurie's organization. And yes. And then it finally, it seemed like after 1976, you took a couple of years off, huh?
Yes, I just trained for the sake of it.
Mm-hmm.
And my good friend who's passed away, Tony Pandolfo.
Yeah, I remember Tony.
At the 1978 Mr. Olympia in Columbus, Ohio. And he came back saying, Chris, I tell you, if you ever got in shape, you would win that contest with your figure and your shape and your symmetry. You should do it. I said, oh, no, I'll never win that. It just seemed like beyond what I could do.
Yeah.
Now, so Olympia is a big deal.
Right.
Arnold's a several-time winner. He's got people like that. Anyway, and Frank Zane has won 3 times in a row.
Right.
So I said, okay. So he began to train me, not so much on the gym floor as to push me. His gym was on Long Island in Amityville, Eastern Long Island. And I would go out, I'd take the train from Penn Station in New York. And I'd go to his gym and work out. And then finally I said, I think if I'm serious, I better get back to Bill. He said, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Bill, who's now moved to Medford. I told you, I kept following him.
Yeah.
L.A., Pasadena, now Medford, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, he didn't go to Alaska. I wouldn't. So I went there, went to Medford, Oregon. It was like a training camp. He welcomed me, and we worked really hard. And that's what I trained there each time for the Olympia.
So that was a 79 Olympia then, right, Chris, in Columbus? That was your first one?
Yeah, I was disappointed being sixth, but I took it on the chin. And then I was third, then I was second, and finally, I went to sixth, to second, and second.
Right.
Because those 2 years in a row, I was beat first Arnold and then Franco.
Right. Yeah. So let's talk about 79. I was actually at that show, Chris, and I had never seen you compete before, but I had known about you because I knew you won Mr. America, and I saw you win the NABBA Universe and the magazines. So I had never seen you in person, and I remember I was very impressed with the way you looked, especially your back. You had really thick traps, and you were thick all over. I don't think you were in quite as rip shape as you would have been, later on in your career. But you were very thick, and I was like, wow. I remember when I saw you, I said, I can see why this guy is so well talked about and why he's won so many titles, so many Mr. Universe titles, because I could see the quality of your physique at that show.
Well, thank you, John. I trained hard, and the training was very basic,
mm-hmm.
and just set after set after set. And they were about 90 minutes. A bodybuilding session, if it's really productive, can't last more than an hour and a half.
Right.
What people say. But I put everything into it.
And what did you think about Frank Zane that year? Because that was his last year, and some say that was the best Frank Zane ever looked.
He looked great. He was sort of untouchable. That was Frank Zane. Then there was everybody else.
Yeah.
I had to give him credit.
Yeah.
this is his final. That's right. I got it mixed up. This is his third.
Yeah.
Title in a row.
Right. And then right after that, you went into the Canada Cup, right? And then you won that. You won first place, beating a lot of the guys that just had beaten you at the Olympia.
Yeah, now I'm kicking butt, as we say.
Right.
And I won that, and I won it the second time. I won it consecutively. And unfortunately, they cut out the Canada Cup.
Yeah.
Bill
yeah.
Boyd, God bless him. He was the sponsor of that meet.
Now, yeah. When you won that show, Chris, in 79, what did you do differently? Did you just stay on your diet from the Olympia until that show? Because I noticed a major improvement in your conditioning, and you were much more ripped.
Yes. I think, well, you're learning more and more and more. And to cut out the sugars. And I got wiser about the diet, too. And wouldn't try to do it overnight.
Mm-hmm.
As a young man, I'm not that I'm old, but I'm a little bit older. You can't quite get away with what you used to.
Right.
Also, the standard is getting higher and higher and higher.
Yeah.
Being cut, then to being ripped,
right.
then to shredded, right. and what's next.
Right.
But the body's reflected that, really.
And then
so I'm getting higher all the time. So I.
When you came back into competition, Bill, in the late 70s, Chris, I'm sorry. When you came back into competition in the late 70s, the posing now, you could pose to music, where before they never did that, right?
Yeah, I posed to music in the show itself, in the night show.
Okay.
Not in the prejudging.
Yeah.
But this posed to music while you're being judged.
Right.
And that was my strong round, round three.
Yeah.
And I prepared that. Bill worked with me. We worked and worked, and I got sick of the music by the time you got there because it's in your head from you're driving a car. You've got it on the tape deck.
Right.
You listen all the time, and you're imagining what your body is doing while this music's going, and what part of the music are you doing this or that.
Right. So
it was all a part of the education.
Yeah.
And I'm really ready.
And then we go into 1980, and they started those Grand Prix circuits where they would have the shows and California, Louisiana, Miami, and you and I believe it was Casey Viator, right, were going head-to-head. He was winning one, you were winning one, and then you finally won the overall at the end.
Towards the end of the second year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Each year there were 10 contests, and the first year, I think I was 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
The second year, 4 out of 5, and I was just... That was easy.
Really?
Not a difficult. I was in shape.
Wow.
What I would do, I would pig out, as we say.
Yeah.
And that night, just go crazy with the pies and cakes and sugar.
Right.
Your body is craving.
Right.
Now that's over. I'm ready to get serious again.
Yeah, that always amazed me, Chris, that you were in shape at every one of those shows throughout the year. And then when you got to the Olympia, which was in Sydney, Australia that year in 1980, you were in even better shape. You were, for that contest, I thought that was one of your best appearances ever. You were big. You were thick. You were ripped. Your posing was right on point. So that was an amazing condition.
I think 1980 in Sydney, Australia, and I can say it was my best year.
Wow. Okay.
Not 82, but 80 was really, I look at my physique. I was a little more ripped in 82.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have quite the thickness.
Yeah.
And my body, and I thought, yeah, okay, good, Chris. But also in 1980, we'll never have another lineup like that was.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Look at those guys. So I was disappointed being second to Arnold, but I was so naive, I thought, well, Arnold Schwarzenegger is Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'll come back.
Yeah.
People were furious. How could they do that?
Right.
And the Australian Association presented me with the winner's trophy. They came over on Qantas Airlines and met me at Gold's Gym and said, Chris Dickerson, Mr. Olympia 1980.
Was that
never talked about that because I respect Arnold, and he was the official Mr. Olympia.
Right.
That is true. That holds true still today, of course.
Right. I want to ask you a little bit more about that show, Chris, because that was like 35 years ago now, and it's still one of the most talked about Mr. Olympias ever. But did you know that Arnold was getting ready for that show, or was that just a big surprise to everybody on the day of the contest?
I knew it, but I wasn't threatened by it. Because and especially when I saw him, and Arnold, don't get mad, but I sort of felt he's a great champion, and he's not ready for this. Look at him. And he was sweating. He was obviously he was nervous.
Yeah.
Had a lot to lose. And I just looked at other people, and I thought, well, the guy who really, you know who I was afraid of? Not afraid of.
Yeah.
Little Danny Padilla.
Uh-huh.
Was ready for that contest.
Really?
And others in on there were other people. I can't think of names now, but what a lineup that was.
Mike Mentzer, Frank Zane.
Frank Zane, yeah. And he's like the outgoing champion. I mean, he's the current champion.
Right.
So I thought, well, I've got to be in here someplace. But I looked at these guys, and I believe... Well, there was African-American from Florida who was so good many times. He never won the AAU Mr. America. Many people felt he should have. Robbie Robinson.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, these guys were... So I thought, okay, when I saw him, so when they called me for second, I said, oh, I guess Arnold won. But I wasn't upset. Other people were.
Yeah.
I thought, well, heck, from sixth to second in 1 year, not bad.
Right.
What really upset me was the year after that in 81 when Franco won.
Now, in 80, Bill, I'm sorry, Chris, Bill Pearl was...
And I accept that.
Bill Pearl was supposed to be a judge, right? And then he recused himself away from the judging panel because he had trained you for the contest.
Yes. Well, he did out of fairness. And it was just preordained. The whole thing was hideous. It was set up like a turkey shoot. I mean, no way I could have won that. Or anybody else but Arnold.
Yeah. Where would you have placed Arnold, Chris?
Honestly, about sixth, maybe.
Really? Yeah. It's funny. That show is so crazy because... When people look at pictures and stuff, a lot of people say, well, I see how Arnold should have won. But every time I talk to someone like yourself or Bill Pearl, or I just did an interview with Samir Banute, everybody who was there at the show said he should have placed about fifth or sixth.
Yes. But Arnold has a way about him that transcends his body. I have to give him credit.
Yeah.
Very charismatic. And he's so self-assured, at least during the competition.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about his being nervous backstage. Mm-hmm. He was noticeably nervous backstage. But...
Why do you say he was nervous, Chris? What was he doing? Just sweating and...
He was sweating a lot, profusely, toweling off, because he seemed in doubt, but had he known... It was just decided that he'd win, but maybe he didn't know. I'm not sure. I can't say.
Yeah. So then we go to 1981, and again, you had another great year with the Grand Prix events. You won the overall there again.
Yes.
And then did you feel like... I heard that there was a lot of dissension in bodybuilding in the pros because they felt like it was going back to Columbus, Ohio. Arnold was going to be promoting the show, and then Franco was rumored to be entering. And a lot of people stayed away from that contest. Mike Mentzer didn't go in it, Boyer Coe, Frank Zane. But you decided to compete. Did you feel that it was going to be a fairly run show?
Well, it wasn't so much that as there was a unofficial boycott
mm-hmm.
bodybuilders after Australia in 1980.
Right.
and we were meeting, and I had to say, well, as a man who's come in second, I hope to win this. So you guys forgive me, but I'm going to compete.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a conscious effort to stay away from the show.
Right.
Part of some of the body. But not so much it was in Columbus. But they were still seething over what happened in 1980.
Right, right. So then we go into the show, and then Franco does go in it, and he competes, and you end up taking second again to Franco.
And I was really upset with that, because he was noticeably not in shape. One leg was noticeably more developed than the other, because it had that accident.
Yeah.
Refrigerator on his back.
Right.
And so I just was very discouraged. And I came back to LA very discouraged. And so I remember one of the officials saying, well, Chris, if you don't compete anymore, you're just making it easy for them.
Yeah.
If say they don't want you, you won't win if you don't compete.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought about that. And I thought, I'm going to give it another try. And I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
And I think it being held in London was good also.
Right.
Always had good luck in London. And they're not swayed by the crowd. Of course, the crowd's more polite.
Right.
I mean, as I said, they're much more polite.
Right.
Than we are here in the States. We yell and carry on. And
let me ask you about Franco. If you could compare Arnold's condition in 1980 and Franco's condition in 81, which one of those two do you think was the better Mr. Olymp? Which one looked better?
Wow. Well, okay. Franco was in better condition.
Yeah.
Than Arnold had been the previous year. But the leg, really.
Yeah.
One was noticeably smaller than the other. It had atrophied.
Yeah.
So that really killed his balance.
And yeah.
His leg, he's not known for his legs anyway. And so that just made it obvious to me that he should not have won.
Yeah, I agree with you, Chris. I was at that show also in 1981, and I thought actually Franco looked really good except for the legs. And when you have a weak body part like that that's so weak, yeah. I thought the best he should have been was fifth place. I thought you, yourself, Tom Platz, Danny Padilla, and Roy Callender all looked better.
Yeah, we were ready for that.
And what did you think of guys like Tom Platz and Danny Padilla, who I think both of those guys achieved their best condition ever at that contest?
Danny Padilla I could talk about for a long time. Tom Platz, to me, was always unbalanced.
Uh-huh.
The legs were overshadowed, and he was not strong in the chest area.
Uh-huh.
But Danny Padilla he's kind of an interesting guy in that he will pick the least opportune time to be in top shape. I've seen him incredible shape when it didn't count so much.
Right, right.
Seems to shoot himself in the foot. But for pound for pound, for a bodybuilder, God. Danny Padilla is scary.
Yeah.
And he is very balanced, and he has it all. But at the time, there's a joke about his eating donuts. I'm not sure if that's true. He also remembers.
Right.
You know. But I don't know if he ate too many donuts the night before, but Danny Padilla always looked good. The best I've seen him was the night of the champions in New York, when Robbie Robinson won.
Right.
And I was judging that.
Oh, were you? Okay.
Yeah, I was sitting on the judging panel. But Robbie kept posing, and Danny just sort of gave out of gas and stopped flexing. Well, it's a performance thing. That pose down, the judges are watching. They're going to see who still has it.
Yeah.
And how bad do you want this?
Right.
And so Robbie just kept flexing and flexing until the cows came home. And he's just going. And finally, Danny just sort of stops. And you almost see him deflate in front of your eyes. But I think Danny should have had it. Had he had a Bill Pearl with him,
Yeah.
I would have really been in trouble.
Right.
It's phenomenal.
Wow. So let's talk about 1982. That was the very special year that you won. And was that just one of those competitions where everything seemed to come together and everything went your way?
I'd say so.
Yeah.
And Bill agreed to come with me.
Well, that would be good. Yeah.
I was cherry on top of the sundae.
Right.
And so I was very happy, and I sort of focused in a funny way. I said, my coach is out there. I'm going to make him proud of me.
Yeah.
And I just focused on Bill. I didn't look at him, but I did it for him. He's come all the way to London to be with me. I'm going to win this damn thing. And I was determined. And that made me so focused that nothing, anybody else was there to stop me. They right. could not. So it was wonderful. It was wonderful. And everything did fall into place. I mean, I was in top shape. All of it was there.
Yeah. What did you think of some of the other competitors that year? Casey Viator and Samir Banute were in outstanding shape, right?
Yes. Samir was in good shape, but not like he came to be the year he won, after the year after that.
Uh-huh.
But it was, to be honest with you, I think I'm still more impressed with Frank Zane.
Really? Okay.
Who had to settle for second.
Uh-huh.
Than anybody there. He was really, he's so professional. He's so poised. You know, he will outclass you if you don't watch it.
Yeah. And Frank was bigger that year, right, Chris?
Yeah, maybe. I suppose so. Yeah.
But it seemed like he didn't have quite the conditioning that you had.
Uh-huh. Well, I was really ready. I mean, Bill worked my tail off.
Yeah.
And he said, we're going to win this, Chris. If you win, lose, or draw, we're going to go for the gold.
Right.
He picked the music out, Trumpets Volunteer, uh-huh. which is English. It's sort of their standard classical song
uh-huh.
by Jeremiah Clarke. It's sort of like the anthem, not quite. It's not God Save the Queen, but it's next to that.
Okay.
So it says, we're in that country, we're going to play their music. So he and we worked and worked and worked. I knew where every toe, every finger was, on what note.
Right. That's great.
And I miss it. I do. I miss that
yeah.
whole preparation.
Now, I want to talk also, Chris, about when you started doing commentary, because in the mid to late 80s, bodybuilding was very popular, and it was on ESPN all the time, right. sometimes on NBC or CBS, and they were using you as their expert commentator, and I don't think they could have made a better choice, because you're so, like I said before, you're very articulate. You could explain, you know, what each bodybuilder needed and what they didn't. And how did you enjoy that experience doing those commentators?
I loved it. I enjoyed it very much. And I would comment on the show during the taping.
Yeah.
And then I was flown up to upstate New York to the ESPN headquarters.
Mm.
We go over everything, and then I could take my time describing everything, because the pictures were there in front of us then.
Right.
It was a wonderful experience. And, I learned a lot having to explain.
Yeah.
That teacher learns.
Yeah.
That was a wonderful. And I got the inside of it. And having had Bill Pearl from the beginning, and then the different associations, different experiences, being backstage and getting from the inside, learning opinions as they changed. And the whole thing was such a metamorphosis from start to finish. I ended up being a different person than I started. And so it was a great education, that and education does that.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was wonderful, because you were commenting on posing routines of I remember Albert Beckles one time was in the Olympia, and he was doing his little dancing a little bit. He said, that's not really bodybuilding, you know, and you were describing. Yeah,
didn't like that. It's a shock. I hated it.
Yeah.
But I said to him, and I just get out there. Come on.
Yeah.
He's dancing around. And he's, what he's doing is he's wasting his music.
Right.
You don't have so much time.
Right.
Get out there. Do it.
Yeah, being such a professional as yourself, you knew what a good posing routine was and what wasn't a good posing routine. And I think you also could point out certain bodybuilders who had really good physical potential, but yes, for whatever reason couldn't mentally get it together, like Bob Paris maybe, or Danny Padilla.
Yes, exactly. It's true. Some people are very gifted. Sometimes being gifted is a curse.
Yeah.
Because if you're not gifted, you've got to work for everything.
Yeah.
And that man who has to work for all of it may end up being, probably will end up being in better condition.
Right.
He will never have the physique, the symmetry, or the lines of proportion.
Right.
More talented man. But he could outclass him and win over him with his condition. And right. I've seen it happen.
Yeah, we just talked to Rich Gaspari recently, and we were talking about that 86 Pro World that he won, and you were the commentator on that. And I remember you saying on there that he may not have the best shape, but he worked harder than anyone else. You could show he wanted it, and he was in great condition, and that's why he won.
True grit here, as we say.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Paid off.
Now, you were also commenting on a lot of the Mr. Olympias that Lee Haney won. What did you think about him as a Mr. Olympia winner?
I thought he was a terrific spokesman. His body spoke for itself, and he got better and better and better. And by the time, from the time he won his first Mr. Olympia in 84, his very last one, he's a, such an improved physique.
Right.
He's improvements that people didn't think were possible.
Yeah.
Myself included. But he improved it. Proved us wrong. The man was phenomenal and a great spokesman for
him. Right, right.
As sort of that good old boy quality.
Right,
that everybody
right.
loves, you yeah. know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. Outstanding champion. He had great genetics. He worked really hard, but he was also very humble, also very nice person, very respectful of people.
Exactly, exactly. That's Lee Haney. I admire him very much to this day.
Yeah. Who else in the sport has really impressed you, Chris? How about Sergio Oliva?
Sergio Oliva was a freak in the good sense of the word.
Right.
He was probably the freakish man on stage. In the good, I mean, just so gifted. I think Sergio had to contend with a great deal. His private life got messed up.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not so stable. I've seen him sort of, oh, how can I say? I've seen him sort of, oh, fooled a little bit on stage. Arnold got to him. I saw it happen.
Yeah.
Arnold's very sophisticated. He's very clever.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the time, you may remember this, John, if you were there, Sergio and Arnold standing on stage side by side. Only one of them could win.
Mm-hmm.
The two were deciding who's going to be the winner here. Arnold, suppose the story goes, and I believe it, turns to Sergio and says, Sergio, let's get out of here. So Sergio walks off the stage. Arnold stands there smiling and beaming. And Sergio just killed himself.
Right.
Now he came back, but it's too late. The damage is done.
Right.
Think that if you're not ready for Arnold, he'll get you.
Yeah.
And so, but Sergio was a great, 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 great champion. He really was.
Some
of the things happened and he did off stage didn't help him.
You know? Yeah.
He was really phenomenal.
What about Serge Nubre? That's a name that hasn't talked about too much, but he had a phenomenal physique, huh?
Yes, he did. I reserve some of the accolades for him. He's a very good poser. But he only had about three poses.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying he knows how to hold the pose.
Right.
He had favorite stance. But he only has about three good poses. But he's a great salesman.
Yeah.
And so also when he flexes, not a lot happens. It's interesting.
Yeah, that's true.
He can just stand there and then he flexes. Well, okay. But that's not a big difference.
His best pose was standing relaxed.
Exactly.
Right.
Sort of quarter side. I think we know the same pose on
right.
Both of us. But he was a great salesman.
Right. A very good salesman. Speaking of posing, Chris, I think that you inspired a lot of the bodybuilders that came after you with your posing ability, such as bodybuilders like Muhammad Makaway, Sean Ray, Lee Labrada. I think all of those bodybuilders learned a lot from your posing.
Well, thank you. That's quite a compliment. I worked a little bit with Sean Ray.
Okay.
But Lee Labrada, oh, wow. And all of them, just great posers. And I think one of the tragedies, and I say tragedies, of our sport, besides other things that I won't go into, is that the posing round no longer counts.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought, John, that the posing routine, choreographed, is your one time to activate, to be active, to compete. Because otherwise, you're judged on what you prepared for.
Yeah.
Round one, semi-relaxed. Round two, the compulsories, yes. But round three is when you get to shine, and that shows your preparation and your degree of creativity. And by them taking that posing out round out, people don't work it now.
I know.
See posers. It's a shame.
Yeah.
Mm.
There's very few bodybuilders out there today that are really good posers.
Yeah. I don't say you don't blame them, but in a sense you can't, because it doesn't matter.
Right.
On the sheet, it doesn't matter now.
Right. Mm. Who do you think was the most impressive Mr. Olympia, Chris, besides yourself?
Let's see. Oh. Well, of course, Larry Scott was the first one.
Yeah.
Now, he was like a kind of golden boy of the sport.
Right.
At the time, the best. Really was. Now you look at Larry Scott. He was okay, but not compared to the guys. Now, the standard got higher and higher, as we say, and higher.
Right.
One of the most impressive Mr. Olympias, in my opinion, besides Frank Zane, I've got to include him in there.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, Arnold at his peak.
Yeah.
But I'd have to include Dorian Yates.
Okay.
For that kind of development and the vascularity and the animal quality he had,
mm-hmm,
was incredible.
Hmm.
And I've seen Dorian Yates, and he's all of those body parts there. Now, after Dorian, we had this incredible, probably the best ever. See, I mean, I can't say A1.
Yeah.
I won't think of his name now. The
Texan. Ronnie Coleman.
Ronnie Coleman. Now, Ronnie Coleman really brought it to a different level, because it's funny how the sports evolve, gets better and better and better and better.
Yeah.
And better. But after Ronald Coleman, I'd have to say it's really hard to judge.
Mm-hmm.
Ronald Coleman, those people, they're outstanding.
Yeah.
A lot of bodybuilding is subjective, and it depends on taste. That's why I say we're not necessarily the best. You're the guy or the woman now, chosen on that particular day by that set of judges. And it's a matter of the beholder. That's why some call it as much of an art as a sport.
Right.
And that's why you're judged on your God-given talent plus the kind of work you put into it. There's only so much you can do. You can't change your body. And that's the heartbreaking part of it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
It really is. You're given so much. If you're not tall, you're never going to be tall.
Right, right.
If you don't have the structure, you're never going to have the structure.
Right.
So that makes it a heartbreaking sport, but
it's
nothing like it.
Yeah.
A good physique with the right posing routine and everything falling into place is the most incredible thing to see, in my opinion.
I agree. Well, Chris, I want to thank you very much for joining us. It was really a pleasure talking about your competitive career and about some of the history of the sport with you. And we hope you write that autobiography. We're all looking forward to that.
It's coming one of these days, hopefully in the near future. Thanks so much, John.
All right, Chris. Thanks for joining us on the Bodybuilding Legend Show, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
All right, Chris.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Chris Dickerson for joining us for that great interview about his fantastic career. And I want to thank again our sponsors, BalanceBodyLabs.com, Florida Alternative Medicine, and SixPackBags.com. Join us next week when we'll start Season 3, where we're going to talk about the 1981 Mr. Olympia contest, probably the most controversial Mr. Olympia ever in the history of the sport. And our guest will be the head judge of that contest, Roger Schwab. So it's going to be a great episode. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week. Take care.